Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than Leicestershire's left-arm off-spin wizard himself, Callum Parkinson. So, Cal, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Pretty quiet, just got back from holiday and getting back into the swing of things, trying to keep busy as all cricket is doing in October.
Yeah, it's a funny time of year, isn't it, October? Because the season's just finished, but you're not quite getting into the swing of things for, well, in this case, 2022, are you? It's kind of that transition phase, a little bit of downtime, you know, just, well, having a bit of a rest and a relax after a very, very busy few months. In fact, 6 months in the county season this year, a very, very busy year indeed. And in terms of today's podcast then, just for the listeners out there, I'll be talking to Cal about his earliest cricketing memories. Then we'll talk a little bit about Derbyshire and, of course, Leicestershire County Cricket Club, seeing as that's, you know, your current club now, Cal. And then we will end today's podcast with some fan questions, Cal. We did get quite a few on Twitter, some interesting ones to say the least, but I won't spoil them just yet. We'll get onto those in due course. But yeah, I think that'll be a nice way to wrap up today's episode. But before we get into all of that good stuff then, Cal, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of the Callum Parkinson cricketing journey. So what are your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
Yeah, I think starting off, I think my old man took me down to Heaton Cricket Club around the corner in Bolton, let's say 5 minutes from the family house. And by all accounts, I took to it fairly quickly. My brother was a bit slower. He was climbing trees. And well, funny enough, now he's obviously a world beater now. But yeah, just loved it straight away. It was cricket in the summer, football in the winter, and kind of grit from there. Played a bit at school and then went into the district, Lancashire age groups, and yeah, just progressed from there.
So very much, again, like a lot of county cricketers, very family orientated in those earliest years, your local cricket club in Bolton. And of course, you have mentioned Matt. We might as well just, you know, get a little bit of Matt Parkinson chat out of the way nice and early. In those formative years, Cal, what was the sibling rivalry like between you two, both on and off the cricket field? Like, how was it growing up with Matt? What did you know? What kind of rivalry, if any, was there in a cricketing sense?
Not a lot, to be honest. We've obviously been asked this question quite a bit, kind of how the dynamic works, kind of what it's about. And, you know, it's a pleasure to be on this journey with him now. But even when we were younger, I probably always had the edge till I was about 15, 16. I batted kind of top four and bowled left-arm seamers. And was probably, I think Matt will agree, probably ahead of him till probably under 15s. And again, he bowled leg spin from a younger age, so it probably took a while for his art to develop and to get an understanding of kind of what he was. So never any rivalry. We always wanted the best for each other. And yeah, we obviously loved playing with him all the time growing up.
Well, that is a lovely, lovely answer there, Cal. And of course, it's paid off, hasn't it? Both of you now playing county cricket. It's fantastic. You for Leicestershire, Matt Parkey, obviously, for Lancashire, my co-host county, Joe Nutsy Nuttall's beloved Red Rose. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, really, how from those early years, you've almost been on the journey together. I know for different clubs, but you have both rose through the ranks and both county cricketers. I mean, it's an immensely, immensely proud thing. Both of you should be incredibly proud of what you've achieved in the county circuit. And in those formative years, Cal, who were your real role models in the world of cricket itself? You mentioned there about bowling some left-arm seamers. Was it seam bowlers, spinners, batsmen, wicketkeepers? Who were your idols and role models in those formative years?
Yeah, I think the obvious one is my dad. My dad bowled leg spin, played a little bit of like Lancashire Federation, I think it was called, back in the day. And then just a few local cricketers, and then looking further afield, can't not mention Flintoff in the 05 Ashes. I'd have been about nine. I remember watching it during the summer, and that was obviously kind of what gripped a lot of young cricketers. And yeah, and just that Ashes series for me, 05, was just where I probably properly got hooked.
Well, it has been brought up, and it does get brought up quite often here on the podcast, 2005, the 2005 Ashes, an iconic series, arguably in a lot of people's minds, the best Ashes series of all time. And for good reason. I guarantee when it comes to the British cricketing public, at least 90% of people have that DVD box set, don't they? Of the 2005
Ashes.
Yeah,
I've got it. See? I was looking at it earlier, actually.
Exactly. That proves my point. I mean, it's just an iconic series, isn't it, here in English cricket? And Cal, I have to ask this. If you could choose just one moment, one highlight from that series, if you could relive it again, live in the flesh, what would you choose and why?
I think that over Flintoff bowled. Did he get Langer first ball or second ball and then got Ponting with what would have been the seventh ball after he bowled that no ball? Just the way he captivated the crowd, wasn't it? And just an unbelievable atmosphere. And like you said, I think the 0-5 Ashes, the way the game was played, obviously the famous Australian side, Shane Warne, it just had all the ingredients, didn't it, for a fantastic series. And it's probably set a too good a standard for series now. You watch some series in international cricket, it can be a mismatch. Crowds might not be as up for it. That's definitely for me and probably for Matt as well, the turning point to say, you know what, this is mint. Like, I'd love to do this.
Well, that is excellent to hear. And yeah, I don't think that's actually been said as the highlight just yet. That over, again, such an iconic moment. The setup to Ricky Ponting was absolutely outstanding from Freddie Flintoff. It really was. But then again, there's so many incredible, you know, moments from that series, aren't there? That Edgbaston test just in general was incredible. You had the climax with, if you're an Aussie, you'll say a phantom glove. If you're English, you'll say definitely touched it, Casper Witch. And then, of course, there's Trent Bridge, Gary Pratt running out, Ricky Ponting. The Oval as well at the end. One of the funniest moments of that series, which I don't think gets enough appreciation, is when the umpires come to lift the bails off, declare that match over, and you got the Aussies in sunglasses because they're saying that it is still light enough to play. And then, of course, you got the England fans, you know, with the umbrellas up and saying it's too dark. I always thought that was a nice bit of Ashes banter, to be honest, in the stands of the Oval. But what a series. And in your opinion, Cal, would you say that is the best Ashes series of all time? I know 2019 could be up there as well, but would you say 2005 would take it for you personally?
Yeah, definitely. Nothing is anywhere close. Funny enough, actually, obviously on holiday, I've read Ricky Ponting's autobiography. And it's actually fascinating seeing from the Aussie side kind of that series and the opportunities they missed and kind of the way they felt they were bullied by England and, you know, their use of the subfielders, like you said, with Gary Pratt. So quite fascinating to read from the other side, the little 1%ers that probably England did that Australia didn't.
It is. It's fascinating, isn't it? I know that's very much in the cricket badger territory, you know, getting into both perspectives, getting into the behind-the-scenes elements of that series, but it was extraordinary. It really was. And again, that will live long in the memory of England fans who, of course, experienced it back in 2005. It was a remarkable summer. And for a lot of people, that was the kickstart, I suppose, when it came to cricket. They started getting back into the sport. They started playing the sport. And it is a seminal moment, I think, in modern English cricket in terms of generating this more public wave of interest, I suppose, in the sport, making cricket a bit more mainstream. In comparison to what it was once in this country. And in that series, there's so many icons. You mentioned Shane Warne, just the 708 test wickets. Not a bad bowler at all. You had the likes of Glenn McGrath. You had the likes of Harmison for England. Like, there were so many fantastic bowlers in that series on both sides. But Cal, for you personally, why did you go into off-spin? I've always wanted to know this because Matt's a leg spinner. You mentioned beforehand about bowling left-arm seamers. What was the moment when you thought, you know what, I'm going to be a left-arm off-spinner? What made that change for you personally?
Good question. So it was actually a lot later than people think. I changed when I was 16, just going into under-17s. So I opened the bowling at Bunbury, you know, the festival.
Mm-hmm.
So I opened the bowling with Josh Shaw, actually, from Gloucester, for the north of England at under-15s. So kind of was a bit of a tearaway quick. I think if you ask some of the lads in my age group when we were a bit younger, I was probably one of the quickest in the country up to a certain point. Took the new ball with Saqib Mahmood. So I think it changed at under 16. I was probably this height and always relied on just out and out pace. Didn't have necessarily the skill set. And I kind of realised after speaking to my old man that to make the next grade, I needed to be something else. I'd have ended up having to bat at six and bowl in little dobbers basically. And I didn't see that as kind of progression. So kind of a bit of soul searching and moved a few clubs and stuff and really gave the spin a go from probably under 16, 17s. And luckily I was captain of Lancs at under 17, so I probably bowled myself more than I should have done. Probably hindered Matt and hindered a couple of other spinners in the side at the time. And yeah, just bowled and bowled and bowled, and luckily it's paid off.
It most certainly has. I mean, we'll get into this as the podcast progresses, but 2021 really has been an excellent season for you, Callum. It really has. It's been absolutely outstanding. And I ask this question to every spinner, in particular off spinners that come onto the podcast. But in your opinion, as a left arm off spinner, what is the most important aspect of the spinner's arsenal? What's the most important weapon for you personally? Do you think it's turn? Do you think it's grip? Do you think it's drift, flight, consistency? What do you think is the most important weapon that an off spinner can possess in professional cricket?
That's a good question. Everyone's different, I think. For me, it would be consistency, because I guess you can build all the other attributes around that one kind of base kind of skill. Obviously, if you spin it miles and you're not consistent, you're going to get picked off by good players. So for me, it's always been consistency and kind of being accurate. And then as I've got a bit older, putting layers on, kind of putting layers on my bowling, you know, kind of get a bit more drift, kind of spin it more. So yeah, so for me, yeah, consistency is kind of the fundamentals of spin bowling, and you're not going to make it as a professional if you've not got that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably a testament to that. I probably fit into that earlier description of can spin it miles, but no consistency at all. The radar's all over the place. It'll either turn beautifully and hit the stumps, or yeah, it probably won't even, you know, hit the pitch. One of those kind of bowlers. That's why, you know, one of us two here on the podcast right now isn't in county cricket and the other one is. But in terms of spin bowling, in particular in those formative years, I suppose, Cal, one of the things I wanted to ask, what was the toughest thing you found about the transition into off-spin bowling? Because it's not often, to be fair, we have that journey so late. Most people who become spinners, the likes of Will Beer, for example, Liam Paterson-White himself, like, they became spinners a lot earlier. They used to be seam bowlers, as did I, to be fair. But you said at the age of 16, 17. So at that age, what was the most difficult thing for you personally when it came from, you know, your bowling rapid, rapid pace? As you mentioned, at Bunbury, you're bowling alongside Saqib Ahmed, of course, has gone on to great things for Lancs in England. What's the most difficult thing that you found in terms of that initial transition into the world of spin bowling?
I think mindset more than anything. Trying to slow everything down was also a challenge. You know, I'd kind of run in slow and still bowl it fairly quick. So having to slow everything down, I found hard to start with. And also just the mindset of kind of spinning the ball, basically. I started from pretty much nothing. So yeah, just more of a mindset. You know, you've got to start thinking like a spinner, something I'd never done. I just run in off 15 yards and hurled it down. So it's a good question, probably one I've not really thought about. I was lucky in a way that I moved clubs, dropped down. So I was playing, you know, Premier League cricket in Cheshire. And I moved clubs, I signed for a team in kind of a more localised league. I think it was called Lancs County League, it was called at the time. And I basically opened the bowling spin, bowled 25 overs a week. And that was real kind of, you know, you're figuring out stuff on the job, aren't you, rather than in the net. So it's a good question, one I've not really given tons of thought to, but I think probably in the initial stages, it was just getting used to bowling slow, I guess, and all the mindset of a spinner.
Absolutely. And that is so important when it comes to spin bowling, isn't it? Because unlike a seamer, you don't have that extra pace to almost outfox a batsman I wouldn't say deceive, but, you know, get one over on them, I suppose, because you can beat a batsman for pace. When you're a spinner, that isn't the case. And as you mentioned, you do have to change the entire outlook of how you bowl. And for me personally, Cal, I'm not sure if you'd agree with this, but for me as a spin bowler, I always think of spin bowling as the more methodical, almost a chess-like version of bowling. And then seam bowling is the rock and roll star. It's the one which gets all the attention. It's the romantic one. It's the one which people always talk about and, you know, really almost immortalise, I suppose. But spin bowling is massively, massively important. And I do feel like in terms of both bowling styles, I do feel as though spin bowling is a little bit more of an art form because it takes years to master. Let's face it, I mean, any young seam bowler can come onto the county circuit or even the international stage and dominate if they're bowling at 90 mile an hour, but not every spin bowler can. And the key thing with spin bowling in particular, I'm not sure actually, Cal, if you can testify to this, but they seem to peak their powers later, don't they? The average spin bowler in terms of research-wise this is. I mean, obviously, it differs for different players, but the average spin bowler, either off or leg spinner, reaches the peak of their powers around 27 or 28 years of age. So I've always found that quite interesting. Cal, what are your thoughts on that per se? Would you agree with that in terms of the actual art form itself takes a bit longer to master?
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, it's experiencing different scenarios as a spinner that you need to do in your formative years, you know, from when you're playing when you're 20 to 25. Experiencing different situations, different feelings, different pressures, that when you are 27, 28, 29, you've been through that journey and you know yourself inside out. And I think England sometimes, I'm jumping the gun a bit here, but obviously I'm quite good mates with a few of the lads that are going away with England Lions this winter. And I look back to England's last great spinner, Graham Swann, and they picked him as a 28, 29-year-old. And he went on to have 6 years, I think, rough guess, of really dominating Test cricket. And I think we can be a bit guilty of going, oh, how good's he? Rather than letting them develop, letting them kind of figure themselves out rather than throwing them in. And then they have these experiences that set them back. So I think you're spot on. I think it's being patient enough. And obviously, the spinner's got to be good enough to stay in the game. But if you're patient with the young spinners and give them the right guidance, I think captaincy is key as well. I'll probably speak about that later. But having good captains who back you and look after you, they're crucial for spinners' development.
100%. And you know what, Cal? This is really refreshing for me to hear as well, because, again, I've been advocating for the exact same points when it comes to spin bowling here in England and Wales. We almost look at young spinners, and let's face it, there's a lot of fantastic young spinners, yourself included. I mean, still only 24 years of age. You've still got plenty of years, not just in county cricket, but potentially international honours beyond as well. But you've got yourself, you've got Jack Carson, Archie Lenham, of course, coming through at Sussex, Amar Verdi, Dan Moriarty. There's so many fantastic young spinners. But I feel like at times we fall into the trap of maybe, I don't know, putting them into the international stage a little bit early because we think they're going to be the next Rashid Khan. Now, Rashid Khan is an outlier when it comes to spin bowling. He's a generational talent. We're probably not going to see another Rashid Khan for many, many years because he's burst onto the scene at the age of 17, 18 years of age, and dominated leg spin. He's already mastered it at such a young age, but the average spinner is not Rashid Khan. They don't bowl as quickly, they haven't mastered it quite necessarily as much as Rashid Khan has yet. And the issue, I think, when it comes to modern spinners, is that there's almost too much expectation on the 22, the 23, the 24-year-olds to almost perform to those levels. When, as we mentioned already, and as research shows, and even anecdotal evidence, you see it with the likes of Adil Rashid, Graham Swann, great, great shout there. Adam Zampa, Tabrai Shamsi in the modern game. They've matured and reached the peak of their powers a lot later. They're now in their mid to late 20s and they're tearing up white ball cricket. So that's just some food for thought. And Cal, as you mentioned, we'll talk about that later, in particular with captaincy, because I would like to know your thoughts about that. But in terms of just the next area of conversation, I suppose, which will be the main chunk, we have to talk about county cricket, don't we? We're here on the County Cricket Podcast. It is the title of our podcast. And Cal, your professional county career started with Derbyshire. So just before we talk about Leicestershire, and then we get into, again, that conversation, we'll pick it up again later about captaincy. What do you remember from your Derbyshire debut? How momentous of an occasion was that for you to step out onto that pitch and represent one of the 18 first-class counties?
Yeah, no, it was massive. Looking back, a bit weird how it came about. I'd been on the academy at Derby, played a bit of second team. I hadn't really kind of pulled up any trees. You know, I'd done okay. I'd got better. And I remember a second team getting sent out and the list with the names on, obviously expecting to be on there. And I'd been doing a little bit of work for my dad at the time. My name wasn't on there. So I kind of thought, you know what, I'm done. Like, I'm going to ring up and just be like, listen, you know, I was going up and down the country to Derby, I was travelling to second team, I wasn't getting a bat, wasn't bowling some days, so kind of a bit disillusioned with it, and kind of was looking at, you know, work placement or I don't know, something in the finance world through my old man. And anyway, so I rang AJ Harris, the academy director at Derby, and said, listen mate, like, what's going on? Like, I'm done, like, I don't really want to be messed about. And he said, hang on a minute, John Sadler's going to ring you. And obviously I have a really good relationship with Sads. So I thought, oh, what's this going on? I thought, I kind of, first initial thought was that they're letting me go, like they're going to say, listen, thanks, but no thanks. And I thought, okay, anyway, ring phone goes with the first team squad. So I was like, wow, this is mint. Like, fully expecting just to run drinks for the 4 days. But, you know, luckily got the nod, and thankfully Billy won the toss, I think, and we bowled. So it didn't give me tons of time to really think. And, you know, looking back on the 4 days, you're a bit naive. You don't really know what county cricket's all about, and, you know, just going straight from club cricket. So luckily it went well. I bowled fairly consistently. I got a really long bowl. Again, played some shots with the bat, and it was a bit of a dream 4 days, really, apart from obviously we couldn't force a win. But, you know, I've got a lot to be thankful for, to play 4 games for Derby, 2 of them against Leicester, and then to sign at Leicester. So, yeah, thankful 4 days, but could have been a lot different.
Well, it could have been. But then again, life has a way of finding itself out, doesn't it? And I did just find it funny, the fact that your first-class debut for Derbyshire was against Leicestershire, which, of course, is your current club. I did find that quite funny. And in terms of that game, Cal, what do you remember in terms of your bowling figures? Do you remember the actual figures? Do you remember the wickets? And do you remember your score with the bat?
Yeah, it's one of the games I remember quite vividly. I think I was, off the top of my head, 4 for 80-odd, 90, and 3 for 90-ish. I think I'd have just fallen short of 50, like 45 or something.
They are not bad shouts at all. 4 for 90 in the first innings. Do you remember all of your wickets from that innings?
I definitely remember the first one. That was Cozzy. Mm-hmm. And I lived with Cozzy for six months in Adelaide the winter before last. So I enjoyed that one in the years we were at Leicester. I remember it. I remember I got Horton caught behind. I think I got Ned as well.
You did.
I can't remember it. So then second innings is a bit more. I think Patini might have been one. Can't remember the others. But no, it was a brilliant 4 days. Got a lot to be thankful for. You know, Billy Godderman really trusted me, and, you know, I think 70 over did, or 75 overs in the match, which for a young lad on debut is unheard of. So obviously a special 4 days. My family came down and watched. But you're quite naive at that point. You know, you don't really know what it's about, and you're kind of just going along for the ride. You don't know if it's going to be your first, your last. You know, you just don't know. So obviously a special 4 days, and want to look back with great pride and fondness.
And you should do, Cal. You definitely should do. 4 for 90 in terms of the other wicket in that first innings. Clint McKay, you actually got him out on 2 occasions in that match. You got him out both times. The Aussie seamer used to play for my beloved Sydney Thunder in the Big Bash. And then in terms of the other wicket in the second innings, I'll give you a clue on this one. I think you'll get him straight away, but Irish wicketkeeper.
Oh, Nobby.
Yep. Nobby. Niall O'Brien, for those who...
Caught behind.
Correct. Yeah. So
I think it was a wide ball. It was a cut ball, I think.
Hey, doesn't matter how they come. That's something we always say on the podcast.
They all count.
They all count. Exactly. It doesn't say that on the scorecard, does it? Just says Bold Parkinson. It's in the wickets column. Hey, one of those. But in terms of that debut, match figures... Very, very good match figures, I must admit. 7 for 178. That's pretty good for a debutant. And as you mentioned, you bowled, 71 overs? That is quite extraordinary. And then with the bat as well, just a little bit about that. 48 not out from 62 balls, which included 5 fours and a cheeky 6. So Cal Parkinson all-rounder, hey?
It's got no better from there with the bat. Still living off that knock.
Hey, fair enough. I'll tell you what, though, that is a very, very memorable debut indeed. And of course, from those humble beginnings in county cricket, you've since gone on to play for Derbyshire's East Midlands rivals, Leicestershire, aka the Foxes. So in terms of that initial move, how did that materialise in the first place? When did you find out that Leicestershire were interested? And how did the transfer itself actually come to fruition?
Well, tricky question. Remember at the time, it was a bit of a kind of ropey issue. A few people weren't that happy, but without going into copious amounts of detail, I think at the time, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but you're quite naive and you don't really understand. And I would have loved to stay at Derby at the time. Obviously, it was all I knew, and I was very grateful that they took a punt on me, and I really enjoyed kind of the lads there. I've still got quite a few close mates there. And but no, just obviously the contract offer they put in was one that me and my agent didn't feel was reflectively fair, I think. And then obviously heard Leicester were interested, and you know, in the end it was a no-brainer, and one that I look back with no regrets. I know at the time a few people at Derby were disappointed, but again, I think if they knew the ins and outs, it was a pretty straightforward decision. And yeah, like I said, no regrets, and I've loved every minute at Leicester. I was made to feel welcome straight away. So yeah, bit of a weird couple of weeks really after it all happened, and but yeah, it's all water under the bridge now, I think.
Well, it is, and at the end of the day, sometimes in sport, things like that happen. We all want, you know, dream moves. We all want players who we like to stay. I can certainly say that from experience at Warwickshire. It's always sad to see, you know, emerging talent go or seasoned veterans go as well. Like, you never want to see players leave the club, but it is just part and parcel of not just the game, but sport in general, isn't it? At the end of the day, there is that business element. And in terms of the move to Leicestershire, I have to ask this, Cal. What were your first impressions of Leicestershire as a club in terms of the players, the staff, and of course, Grace Road as a venue? What did you make of the Foxes, per se, in those, you know, earliest of days?
Yeah, no, I really liked the ground. I'd only had that one experience there, that first 4 days. So you kind of warm to it pretty quickly when you do all right there. And in terms of the group, it was a really experienced group, which it was a far cry from kind of the direction we're going at the minute, really. You know, we had a lot of senior players. We had Cozzy was in there, Clint Mackay, Ned Eckersley. I know we had Luke Ronke for the first year in T20, Neil Dexter, Paul Horton, you know, great group of senior guys that kind of led the group and were really kind of crucial in terms of my development to kind of learn how the game should be played and how the kind of the grind of the county circuit kind of operates. And, you know, it's a shame that kind of some of them lads moved on in years to come. But, you know, first impressions were of a club kind of with a lot of potential and kind of a really nicely balanced group of senior and younger players.
Well, that is nice to hear. And I must admit, when it comes to Leicestershire, I'm sure I've said this on the podcast plenty of times, but it is just one of those almost family slash community kind of clubs. You really can feel it, like you see the regular faces. We saw them at Edgbaston this year, for example. A number of your faithful turned up in the Holly stand making an absolute racket, which didn't pay off in the end, fortunately, for Warwickshire. But no, they are a very, very good bunch of fans, the Foxes fans. Very, very loyal and absolutely love the team as well. And Grace Road, I think it's quite an underrated venue, I'm going to be honest. I quite like it. I don't like the result that we had there in 2019 as a Warwickshire fan, under the Sky Sports cameras in the T20 blast. Colin Ackerman, 7-18. I'll never, ever forget that night, Wednesday the 7th of August, 7:45 start. You see, that's just etched into the memory. I remember that all.
You're thinking about that before you go to bed at night.
Yeah, literally rent-free Colin Ackerman is up there. I'll have to get him onto the podcast at some point, you know, just for some closure from that that immortal night in Leicester. And we got stuck in traffic on the way back as well because England were playing Switzerland. Yeah, so that was a good... I mean, obviously, it was
stinky
a good night.
Day.
Well, for me, but for you, Cal, that would have been quite a nice night.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, it just kept taking wickets, didn't it? It was remarkable.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Colin Ackerman, 7-18, the world record. Yeah, never, ever forget that night, but... Hey, it's cricket at the end of the day. Funny things happen, don't they? They really do. And in terms of your time at Leicestershire, Cal, in, well, I suppose not so much in retrospect, but just looking at it from 2017, obviously to 2021, what do you say has been the highlight for you? What do you say has been your proudest moment for the Foxes so far?
There's a few that stand out. I think being appointed vice captain at the start of this year was quite a proud moment. And then obviously, going to number one in the T20 wickets was obviously another massive kind of achievement and one that gave me a great source of pride. And then just finally, probably the 50 wickets. Yeah, you know, it's a big achievement. I think I saw a stat the other day, you know, there's only been 5 English spinners get there in the past, I think was it 10 years or something. So kind of sunk in a bit more when I saw that stat. But, you know, I think the vice captaincy one was a massive day for me, you know, to feel like I'm held in a decent regard by the club and the coaches and my teammates. So yeah, those are the ones that stand out.
Well, let's take those apart one by one because 3 very, very memorable moments, to say the least. And the first one you mentioned, the vice captaincy. Now, there's something in particular I want to ask about this, and that is, of course, the announcement video. You know exactly what's coming. I could see it on your face. Right, what on earth was the thought process behind that announcement video? For those of you who haven't watched it, Cal, could you just give a little bit of a background as to what it actually entailed and maybe what happened afterwards?
You're asking the wrong bloke. I was just a mere prop. But no, it involved a GoPro on my head and driving my car in, signing the contract. But you got the wrong man. I was just merely doing as instructed. But no, Scott, our media man, done a good job, and he's trying to get, I think he wants it to be a football account. you know, if I was playing football there and did that, there'd be loads of comments saying, how sick's this? But instead, I watched it back and I was like, oh, this isn't good. But no, yeah, you're asking the wrong bloke.
Hey, fair enough. I mean, you mentioned about comments. One of the funniest ones, I think, was actually from Jake. Now, Jake is a long-term listener of our podcast, follows us on Twitter as well. And it was something about speeding in the car park, which I did find quite funny. Did you get a little bit of a telling off from Jar from that?
I don't think so. But they did put speed bumps in after it, so they might be called a parky bump.
Oh, that is brilliant. That is absolutely fantastic. It was a really, really funny moment, I must admit, in terms of that video. It was unique. It was unique. But again, it is a special moment. And in terms of the actual occasion itself, becoming vice captain, for you, Cal, how momentous of an occasion was that for you? Vice captain of Leicestershire County Cricket Club, one of the most successful, in particular, T20 clubs in the county circuit. They've won it on three occasions, the only county to do so. How important of a moment, how prestigious of a moment was that for you when they gave you that vice captaincy?
Yeah, a massive one, really. I think it only sunk in when I realised how many players had kind of been and gone in my 4 years. Obviously, I had some really good players leave. You know, I think back to, like, obviously played with Mohammed Abbas, you know, Ben Raines, a county cricket superstar, and a very good friend of mine. And you know, when I'm getting messages off people like that, you know, congratulating me, Cozzy, and you know, it made you feel, obviously I wasn't expecting really Colin to miss quite as much cricket as he did in the end. You know, it ended up doing four Champo games, which in an ideal world, Colin would have played and would have been a better side for him playing. But I loved the experience. And yeah, you know, it's more a feather in your cap that you're doing the right things on and off the field. And yeah, hopefully I can keep putting in performances that justify the vice captaincy and, you know, keep making the members of Leicester happy.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know that the Foxes fans out there as well will definitely be hoping for that as well, Cal. And I alluded to it there about T20 and Leicestershire as a county. They are the most successful T20 club in the circuit. They've won it on three occasions, three times winners of the T20 Cup / T20 Blasters, as it's been known since 2014. But becoming Leicestershire's all-time leading T20 wicket taker, how was that for you, Percy? Again, I don't want to keep on saying how momentous, how proud, but how big of a moment was that for you, Percy, considering all of the players that have been and gone before you at this club? How big of a moment was that for you, Cal, personally?
Yeah, it was a huge moment, probably in the top couple of moments in my career so far. The club are very kind. They organised a video with some messages on, you know, from my girlfriend, from my family, you know, from players that I've played with. And that was really touching. And I think, again, like I've said before, to take them wickets, you've got to stay in the side. You can stay in the side. You've got to bowl the overs. So, again, like I said, it's just a proof in the pudding that the hard work you're putting in is good enough. You know, I've played quite a lot of, I don't think I've missed a match in T20 cricket since I signed. So, hopefully that's a run I can keep going. And yeah, like I said, I think more important than not, it's about winning games and contributing to a successful Foxes team, which I don't think we're that far off.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'll get your thoughts on this in due course, Cal. But I've always mentioned this on the podcast. I love the project at Grace Road at the moment with this incredible core of young, talented players. Yourself, the likes of Scott. I know Scott hasn't played loads of Red Bull cricket. I think he does have a Red Bull career as well, but in T20 cricket, Scott Steele, absolute gun. You brought in Roman Walker, for example, another good young talent. Louis Kimber continues to impress. I know a lot of people who rate him incredibly highly, so Foxes fans, do keep an eye out for him. Sam Bates, Nathan Bowley as well. Like, there's a lot of good young talent in the East Midlands at the moment. It's just a case of experience. And as soon as this group does get experienced, yeah, I think you'll be challenging for silverware, to say the least, Cal. And just the final thing of those proud moments, you said the third and final one was, of course, 2021. 50 wickets in this year's County Championship. Now, I just want to read your stats, if I may, okay, for the listeners out there. So in 2021, you were the ninth leading wicket taker in England and Wales, Leicestershire's leading one, of course, with 50 wickets at 29.04, which included 3 5-wicket hauls and a 10-wicket haul against Gloucestershire, which was a massive win for the Foxes, wasn't it? An innings and 93-run victory at Grace Road. And in terms of those stats, that made you the second leading spinner in the entire league, behind only Simon Harmer, who again pretty much dominates county cricket every single season. So the leading English spinner in the county circuit. In hindsight, how would you reflect upon your performances, Cal, in 2021? How would you go about describing your performances in the county championship in particular, in your own words?
I think it was a massive learning year for me. You know, I started off pretty poorly, not just for me, but, you know, as a team, you know, we got thumped for 600 first 2 weeks. You know, I think I was 2 wickets for 400 runs, something. So there was some tough times at the start, and you know, I did a bit of soul searching and trying to groove some certain things and trying to stick with what I knew and keep the faith. And I think it was just about learning how to kind of operate in county cricket, how to be successful. And luckily I kind of did that. I got on a bit of a run and stuck with it for a long time. So I think the challenge now comes with backing it up next year. You know, this year is nothing if I can't have a successful, you know, 2022. But I mean, to sum up 2021, it stuff of dreams for me, really. I wasn't expecting, you know, probably here to play that many red ball games. I just missed a wet week in Hampshire, which in hindsight wasn't the worst thing in the world. So yeah, just delighted to contribute. Again, like I said, it would have been better in a few more wins, but you know, as long as I'm contributing, then, you know, hopefully we can keep moving in the right direction.
Absolutely, Cal. And I've got absolutely no doubt that you will. We've been so, so impressed with your performance here on TCCP throughout the entire season. Of course, we've always known the T20 abilities because you always tear it up for the Foxes. As I said, I can attest to that firsthand in a couple of occasions at both Grace Road and Edgbaston. But I was so, so impressed with the Red Bull performances this season. And I know this might be a bit of a difficult question, but was there anything you did differently in terms of 2021 which you think could be the root behind that success? Was there anything that you tried out, anything that you experimented with, maybe both on and off the field, which you think was an underlying factor behind those improved performances?
I think the start of it was probably lockdown. I did quite a lot of work in lockdown on my own and with my brother as well, and also trained a bit at Ormskirk with Gav Griffiths and Simon Kerrigan and Mikey Jones, actually. So just did a bit of kind of searching on my own. I didn't use too many coaches in that period. It was more grooving my action, trying to feel stronger in my action. I wasn't kind of at peace with my, call it techers, say, probably until the Bob Willis Trophy 2020. And then kind of just ran from there. And yeah, that's probably been a contributing factor. And also, I know we brushed on it earlier, but I can't underestimate like how big a impact Colin Ackerman's had on my red ball stuff. He's got total belief in me and just backs me when potentially I've not had the backing in the past. I've not potentially bowled the overs that kind of I could or should have done. So I owe a lot of thanks to him and to Nico and also Jigganake as well for kind of believing me and sticking with me at times when potentially they might not have done.
Well, it is vital, isn't it? And to be fair, I think that is a wonderful place to pick up that conversation again. I did say we'd go back to captaincy because it's so important, in particular for young spinners, to have a captain that believes in them. And this is a topic which has come up so, so many times on the podcast. When it comes to spinners both young and old, when it comes to young spinners having a captain right now who believes in them, who will put them in those pressure situations and, you know, expect them to deliver, because that's the only way you're going to get these experiences. And for older spinners as well, that belief, you know, from captains in those formative years put them on the right path to success in both county and international cricket. So for me, Cal, just my question, I suppose, with regards to captaincy, how important do you think the role of the captain is to moulding the spinners of tomorrow when it comes to that belief, when it comes to handing a spinner, let's say they could play it safe and go with the seam bowler, but they give it to a spin bowler, win us the match. How important do you think of a role the captain plays when it comes to developing, shaping and moulding young spinners?
Yeah, I think it's massive. I mean, stop me if I go on a bit of a rant here, but, you know, I think to breed successful spinners, they A, got to bowl, and secondly, not just bowl when all the seamers have bowled. You know, there's a good group of young spinners around the country. I look at you got Don Besh, you got my brother, you got Mason Crane, you know, Jack Carson massively impressed me when we played against him this year. You got Amar Verdi, you've got Moriarty, you got Matt Critchley, Patterson White. You know, there's so many around, Travaskis, and especially Red Ball. You know, you need a bit of loving. You need to feel valued. You've got to earn that trust. But I mean, if they're setting you up to fail, then it's going to be hard. So I'm certainly positive from what I've seen this year. You know, there's a lot of spinners getting well looked after now, which is crucial. You know, in probably years gone by, they've done a lot of kind of 12th man, a lot of bib life, and a lot of kind of talking overs when either the game's done or you know, the seamers have not got any wickets. So I think it's about exposing us to different situations. Can we hold an end on day one? You know, can we attack on day four? You know, can we bowl and hold an end while the seamers are going attacking at the other end? And kind of experiencing these different roles that kind of, you know, that hopefully in the long run, you become a Simon Harmer who can operate on whatever surface he wants and just does his thing. So, yeah, you know, the spinners I played against, you know, Amar bowled a lot of overs against us and bowled really well. And I think Jack Carson's going to be superb for Sussex. So there is certainly a good young group and hopefully we'll manage well and trusted. And yeah, and I think the big thing for me is feeling the love and kind of, you know, if you have spinners that feel insular, I know speaking with a few of them, when you feel under pressure for your spot and you're kind of coming on at 200 for two, you know, you're pushing up a hill, aren't you? So I think that's the kind of big thing for me is, you know, we've got some really good spinners about kind of be guided in the right way and go on to bigger and better things.
100%. I think you've articulated that incredibly well, Cal. I really do. And again, I 100% back that. I really do. Like, we've had a number of these young spinners on the podcast. Jack came on, for example. He's only 20 years of age. He genuinely talks like an experienced county veteran. He also remembered every single one of his first 40 wickets, which I think was absolutely extraordinary, including the type of dismissal. So yeah, Jack Carson, definitely someone to watch out for. Yeah, exactly. I made the same face, Cal, when he did it. It was just this look of bemusement and amazement when he finished it off. It was absolutely remarkable. Listeners, you can, of course, find that on our website, the Jack Carson Podcast. But we've had him, we've had Patterson White on, we've had Trev as well from Durham. And I just could not agree more with regards to the use of spinners. Because spinners, I know obviously not every time, you're not going to go, right, we need a wicket here, let's go to the spin bowler. In particular, if it's a green wicket, you're not going to. The mind straight away says, bring on your strike bowler, which is usually a seamer. But when it comes to spin bowlers, the only way that these guys can mature, develop, grow their own personal game is through experience. And the way they get those experiences is by being thrown into the deep end on occasions, being put into those pressure situations, allowing them to try and shape the way in which a game goes, allow them to try and win a game, make them bowl in the power play, for example. Try something different. Give them more time to bowl. And you'll see that the spin bowlers in this country have got so, so much talent. They really have, Cal. I know that we've mentioned so many names, but there really are a whole group. There's a plethora of good young spinners and young spinning all-rounders. We haven't mentioned Jacob Bethel, for example, from my county of Warwickshire. Again, another very, very good young talent. But the key is about using them. The key is about trusting them and believing them. And fingers crossed, by your description there, Cal, hopefully that will happen, won't it?
Yeah, you know, fingers crossed. There's a lot of good captains on the circuit and a lot of experienced figures at a lot of clubs. So, you know, like you said, if we can kind of keep producing these spinners, I know we've got a young one at Leicester, Rahan.
Oh, yeah.
Who certainly could be something very special. if he's guided and, you know, not pushed. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of good young talent. Look at that England under 19s. I think they had a plethora of spin options. And, yeah, you know, it only bodes well. And hopefully, you know, the ECB can not punish teams if they do get it spinning. You know, England notoriously struggle in the subcontinent. And a slightly selfish point of view, but you know, if the pitches are spinning, let's not hinder teams for trying to encourage that.
No, I think that's a fair point. At the end of the day, obviously not every single wicket, you don't want every single one being an absolute burner, but if you have one or two per season, it comes back to experience, doesn't it? If every single county wicket is incredibly flat or it's incredibly seam conducive, neither batsmen nor bowlers will learn. Because at the end of the day, you're going to get into that rhythm, that routine, which will serve you well in England. But as soon as you go to Sri Lanka or India or Bangladesh, where it is turning a lot, those experiences are not going to be there. And that is something which I do think is pivotal when it comes to developing young talent. And another aspect, another role, I suppose, which is vital to spinners, and I'd love to know your thoughts about this, Cal, is the role of the wicketkeeper. Because, as we all know, wicketkeepers are different breeds. They're very, very chatty. They're the goalkeepers of cricket, as I like to call them, because they're either incredibly loud and don't stop chirping, or they're unnervingly quiet. There's not usually any in-between, to be fair. They're either an absolute chatterbox or they're a silent assassin, shall we say. But when it comes to the role of the wicketkeeper, how vital is a good, strong, reliable wicketkeeper to a spin bowler, Cal?
Yeah, it's crucial. And also, putting in the hours together, I think, is a big thing that kind of we've learned this summer. You know, don't just bowl at them during the games. You know, can you work in practice? Can you work pre-game? Can you do it on days off? You know, I've got a great relationship with Harry Swindles. He's number one glove man at Leicester, and he's getting better and better. He's very honest. You know, he sees where he needs to improve. You know, we had a couple of spinning pitches. He felt out of his depth, so he worked harder and harder, and by the end of the year, he was faultless. So it is crucial. You need to have that full trust, don't you? And, you know, they're not going to glove it every time, but if they put the work in with the spin bowlers, if they do miss a couple, you can probably forgive them.
Well, yeah, exactly. You can't expect them to get it 100% of the time, can you? It's like with fielders as well, dropping catches. It's part and parcel of the game, but I have always thought that wicketkeeper to spinner dynamic is absolutely crucial. And when you look at the real great wicketkeeper spin bowler combinations, I'm thinking Sangakkara Murali, for example. I'm thinking Gilchrist Warne. Okay, the real, real top, top draw. I mean, the Cumbrae and Dhoni as well, and Harbhajan and Dhoni, and to be fair, any Indian spinner and MS Dhoni, because Dhoni's an incredibly talented wicketkeeper, one of the best ever, in my opinion. It really does, I'd say, it underpins a successful team, in particular in subcontinental conditions. But I've always thought it's really, really important, and it's good advice for young spinners out there, keeping constant communication with your wicketkeeper so that they know your plans, so that they know what to do in certain situations. It really is pivotal when it comes to game time. But Cal, aside from captaincy and aside from spin bowling, I suppose, because otherwise we'd be here for another 2-3 hours, don't we? I genuinely could talk about spin bowling all day. I think it's absolutely fascinating. But before we get on to the fan questions, just a couple of questions with regards to the future, of course. And in terms of both your personal and from a team perspective, I suppose, what are your future aspirations with Leicestershire heading into 2022 and the years beyond?
That's a good question. I think from where we're at the minute, I think it's just keep progressing. And whatever we deem progress to be. You know, I don't think, like we've said, we're a million miles off with the right overseas recruitment. I think we could definitely challenge good teams next year. In terms of white ball, you know, look at our T20 side last year. In my opinion, we probably underperformed. I think we had quite a lot of bases covered. And hopefully with another campaign behind us, with young lads like Rishi Patel, Louis Kimber, you know, Harry Swindles again, a rejuvenated Lewis Hill, who's been magnificent last season. So, you know, that's probably one disappointment from last year. I think on paper, we're actually a pretty good T20 side. And, you know, to finish top run scorer and top, you know, to have the top wicket taker and not qualify is quite frustrating, I guess. But yeah, you know, Can we sneak into the quarterfinals again? You know, is finals day a possibility? And then just, can we be in the mix come September in Red Bull? I think if we're there or thereabouts, that's definitely progress for me.
Absolutely, it is. And it's so interesting you mentioned there about Leicestershire in the T20 format, because I know it is disappointing with regards to Josh Inglis and Naveen Al-Haq, respectively, being leading run scorer and leading wicket taker, and the club not making the quarters. But at the same time, I think it's a testament to say that the club's going in the right direction and that the recruitment process has been excellent. And of course, there is one man behind that, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mr. Dan Weston, regular guest here on the podcast. I do think that Leicestershire are going in the right way. It is literally just a case of experience. At the end of the day, you need these building blocks. You can't just magic up a winning team, a successful team out of nowhere. You have to put in the hard yards. And the thing with Leicester, you've got the foundation. It's literally about building upon that. It's going to be this core of young players who are going to play together. You'll get along as well, don't you, Cal? I've noticed that with Leicester. There does seem to be a good team dynamic at Grace Road.
Yeah, definitely. We spend a lot of time together off the field, always going for coffee and, you know, going for food and stuff. So it is a very good dynamic. And that could only, again, bode us kind of good signs on the field. In my opinion, you know, if we can add a little bit of experience, that would benefit us, you know, a couple more lads that potentially the young players can learn from. And I think we won't be a million miles off, you know, if we can get the overseas recruitment spot on. Hopefully, you know, give a bit of support to the legend that is Chris Wright, then, you know, we won't be miles off.
100%. And I'm glad that you mentioned Chris Wright. Really is an absolute legend of the circuit. In my opinion, should have played for England. And that is incredibly biased from 2012. But yeah, great seam bowler. Loved Wright. Him and Keith Barker, amazing together. Absolutely exceptional opening combo with the new ball. But Cal, that's pretty much it for the main part of today's podcast. But I alluded to it right at the start. We do, of course, have our fan questions. Our first one technically isn't a fan. If anything, we here at TCCP are fans of him. But it is, of course, from Jake Linsott, Jay Lintz himself. everyone's favourite left-arm wrist spinner in county cricket. And he's asked this on the podcast before. It's a cheeky question, but why not ask it anyway? So, Cal, who's the better-looking brother, yourself or Matt?
Well, you know, I've got to say myself, but, you know, Jay Lings, he should think me as well, because I've got a very similar haircut to him. You know, I'm losing it at an alarming rate, and obviously he's fully gone, isn't he? So I'd like to think he's in my corner as well, you know, left arm union and all that. So, you know, I'll go with myself, why not?
Fair enough. Jake, I'll tell you what, when we get Jake on the podcast next, I'll ask him that exact same question. We'll put him on the spot for you.
And let me know.
Yeah, we will indeed, Cal. Moving on to our next one. This is from Andrew J. Walker. This is quite an outside-of-the-box one, to be fair, from Andrew. If you hosted a chat show, what would you call it and why?
God, I should have read these questions before. Should have prepared something. Chat show. Oh, be something like Slow Left Arm Club or something. You know, I don't know. Something spin-related. Slow Left Arm Chat Show.
I was going to say
Spinners Union.
Yes, there we go. Spinners Union, that might
Spinners
work.
Spinners Union. Yeah, go with that. Go with that.
I would have said the Spin Badger, but that's Josh Poisden's. He's already got that.
Yeah, he's very good. I've listened to a few of his podcasts. Listened to his one with Keshav Maharaj. They're very good.
They are indeed, yeah. Very, very good. And of course, I do miss Josh from Warwickshire, now retired as well. Hasn't he, Josh Poisden?
Great man. Great man.
Yeah. Absolutely. Wishing him all the best outside of the world of cricket. This next one is from Ben. This is quite an interesting question, Parky. Would you value a fiver or a century more? And we'll put this in a match-winning situation. Would you rather get a match-winning century or a match-winning fiver, and why?
My head's telling me fiver, because obviously that's my job. But my heart's telling me, you know, the sense of achievement if I got a match-winning 100. Well, I want to sit on the fence and say either, but if I had to just go with one, probably go the 100, just because, you know, never got one. So yeah, I'd have to go with that one.
To be fair, Kel, you're not that far off when it comes to the high score. 75.
Yeah, that was, again, living off that was 2017. need to pull my finger out and start getting some runs.
Hey, who knows? 2022 match winning century could be on its way. It could be like Jason Gillespie, you know, and you can bring it up every conversation.
Yeah. May bring out a wine, Parky 100, Dizzy 200.
It is always nice, though, isn't it, when Telenders get a nice big score? Always puts a smile on my face, in particular, Night Watchman. In fact, what is your opinion on the Night Watchman role, Cal? I'd love to know your thoughts on this because we did an entire podcast about this, talking about the likes of Alex Tudor, talking about the likes of Liam Norwell for Gloss in 2016, Jason Gillespie in that game against Bangladesh. Are you in favour of the Night Watchman role, or do you think it's a little bit of a waste? What's your actual, you know, your thoughts and feelings on the position?
It's a good question. It's actually been a bit of a hot topic in our dressing room, you know, throughout the season. Kind of should we use one? You know, at times we double up. We go two for, instead of six overs left. You know, we'll get two lads padded up. So I'm for it if it's used in a positive way. If we're well ahead in the game, I'm probably a strong advocate to go, you know what, you know, or even if we're like four down, I'm always a bit like, well, what's the point, kind of. I guess a lad at number six wouldn't be happy with that. But, yeah, I think if it's used in the right way and the bloke doing it's competent enough and it's not just a sacrifice and you go from two down to four down like that. So, yeah, no, I think it's still got its value in some situations.
It's funny you say that because I tend to agree with that. But then again, when you look at the stats, again, we did an entire podcast on this. We looked at, I think it was from the 1980s onwards. Stats tell you night watchmen don't work. But again, there is something, I don't want to say romantic, but quite majestic, I suppose, when a night watchman does do well. I think of this season as well, Mason Crane in that game down at the Rose Bowl against Yorkshire, 29 from 197. When you see an innings like that, it kind of makes you think, you know what, this inning sometimes is worth it. And of course, Liam Norwell as well in 2016 for Gloss. I do think they're quite magical moments when they do pay off. And talking of Mason, actually, Mason is a former guest here on the podcast. We had him on a couple of episodes ago, and something just popped up in my mind because Mason actually wanted us to ask this to our next guest, Cal, which is, of course, you. With regards to your squad number, is there a reason behind your squad number for Leicestershire? Is there a special meaning, you know, behind choosing that squad number itself, or did you just pick it and go, I'm going to stick with that?
I think my originally I wanted 55 because when I played for Derby at Grace Road and then the four games for Derby, I didn't have a squad number. So on the kind of manual scoreboard, they use 55. So I was just like, all right, sweet, I'll go with that. obviously signed for Leicester because he had 55. And then I asked for another two numbers actually. And again, both taken. So I just kind of got to the point where I was like, well, what's left? And then the woman kind of went 10. So I was like, sweet. Well, yeah, why not? I'll go with 10. And then it actually obviously became available for a brief period, the 55. But, you know, I've grown a bond with number 10 now. And, you know, I'd like to think if I'd ever left Leicester, you know, in years to come or for some reason, you know, I'd hopefully get 10 again. So it's kind of stuck with me now.
Fair enough. So in terms of the origins, there wasn't a sentimental reason, but it's become that. It's evolved that over time. Fair enough. Yeah. I'm going to be honest. If I was to guess, I would have thought it would have had something to do with Bolton and football. But
No. If I was doing that, I'd have gone probably number four, Kevin Nolan, but pretty sure that was done as well.
Was it? So,
yeah. Oh, he's a legend, Kevin. Legend.
Hey, fair enough. That's quite nice. On to our final one, Gal, which funnily enough is about football. It's from our good mate Jake Firth. I alluded to him earlier in the podcast, and this is just a nice light-hearted way to end today's podcast, Cal. But Jake asks, why aren't you top of the Dunder Mifflin Office fancy Premier League table, Cal?
Oh, I knew this was coming. Why am I not top? I think I was top for a couple of weeks. I've had a couple of bad weeks, if I'm honest. Went on holiday. I'll blame it on going on holiday. Took a couple of minus fours, which you should never do, and it's not paid off. So I'm pretty sure I've already took a minus four for next week. So I'm kind of... and I've already wildcarded, so if Jake's listening, I'm under the pump until probably January when I can play my next one. So it's about clinging on. Pretty sure I'll probably still be above him, right? But yeah, I'll be back. I'll be back.
I'm going to be honest, by the way you framed that question, I thought he was top.
I'm pretty sure he's... I mean, he was nowhere near when I last checked. But, you know, he's obviously got too much time on his hands if he's worrying about me in 10th.
Hey, fair enough, Jake. Well, there is your answer to that question. I thought that was quite a nice way to wrap up today's podcast, to be honest, Cal. So I think we'll end it there, shall we say, because it has been a thoroughly, thoroughly engrossing hour or so. I must admit, I've absolutely loved it. Time has absolutely flown by there. I didn't even notice. But before we end today's episode, Cal, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example, websites, Instagrams, Twitters, anything like that?
No, nothing to plug, unfortunately. Not yet, anyway.
Oh, okay. Intriguing.
All good. I'll leave it to the imagination.
Well, as we always do, it's customary here on the podcast. We will, of course, leave your Twitter link in the bio. So for any of our wonderful listeners out there, you can, of course, follow Cal, follow his journey, follow when he's taken 60, 70 wickets next season in the County Championship. You can him firsthand in the world of Twitter. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.